I am not telling you to go and have sex. But at some point in your life, something is going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to be faced with, you're going to come at a cross path where you're going to be like, oh my God, should I listen to my Catholic parents?
Yeah.
And like actually like abstain for the rest of my life until I'm married or whatever? Mm. Or do I follow my body?
Mm.
Or do I follow what I want?
Today, I speak to Kim Windvogel, who is an author, poet, and activist. She's the co-founder of FEM Projects, which is an NGO dealing with sexual and reproductive health rights and education. Let's get into it with Kim.
Welcome back to Bake the Podcast, and this is a POC podcast. Today, I've got Kim Windvogel. Is that right?
Yes, you said my surname correctly. I always get so excited when people introduce me.
What do they say? Windvogel.
Yeah, like Windvogel. I've heard Windvogel. Vogel also, like, it's like weird stuff.
Like German.
Yeah. So, Windvogel, if you say it supposedly correctly, that's why I'm using these quotation marks, it's Windvogel, and it means windbird.
Oh.
I like it. I'm an A sign. I'm a Gemini. I think you're a Gemini,
too. I'm a Gemini. Yeah. Oh, my God. When's your birthday?
27 May.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Amazing. Okay, so. This is going to be a long conversation. There's basically four people in the room. So, Kim, besides being an author, I don't know why this happened. And now I feel like I've done something.
No, let's just lift this up. See, technological issues happen a lot.
See, when the producer steps out to take a phone call, and then Kim is to be the new producer.
Oh, my God. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do that.
That's an excellent idea.
There we go.
Okay, so Kim, besides being a newly published author, is this your first book?
Yeah, so the book is called They Called Me Queer.
Yeah.
And I compiled it and contributed an essay to it.
Okay.
And I did like all of the laborious work.
Okay.
Of getting 29 queer people of color.
Wow.
From all across the province and some parts of South Africa, and as well as some people based in Botswana and just various parts of Africa.
So Southern Africa sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
To contribute to this book.
So about they're contributing their stories and like what they've experienced as people of color.
Who are queer. Yeah. And everyone, each one of them has had some form of experience of living in South Africa.
Okay.
So one of them lived in South Africa for 5 years, did their master's year or their honors, I don't really remember, and then moved back to Botswana, where they're from. So I asked them to contribute because I was like, you know, you also have an experience of living in South Africa, a queer person. What is your experience? Yeah. Write about it.
Well, what is your experience as a queer person? Or do you identify as a woman?
I mean, I identify.
I know you say non-binary.
Yes.
Okay.
I identify as a lot of things.
Unpack non-binary for us. Because Kim's profile is called @blazingnonbinary.
Yeah.
So that's where you can find her. So unpack non-binary for those of us who aren't as woke and with the times.
I mean, I'm not the wokest of the woke.
Oh my gosh, you are the wokest.
No.
You're so woke.
I think to me, non-binary, when I just started to, you know, identify with that term, it was mostly based on my gender and the fact that I didn't always feel like a societal woman, that I have to perform certain things that, you know, when you're born with a vagina, you have to be a certain way. Like, you have to be nurturing and motherly.
Yes,
and even though these qualities are amazing, it doesn't mean that just because I was born with certain sex characteristics that I need to fulfill that, right?
Yeah.
So I started to question my identity, especially my gender identity. And I was like, you know what? I'm blazing non-binary. Mm. I'm a non-binary person because I have access to all the energies, whether it's masculine or feminine, you know, and I can be on that spectrum. I can be between
them. I feel
them,
like all of us are kind of like fluid when it comes to identifying with our masculinity and our femininity. And I like to consider myself as like, I'm very feminine in terms of the way I look, and I speak softly, and I'm like delicate and petite.
Yeah.
But then I have this ugly side, which I used to think was ugly, and I actually fucking don't think it's ugly. It's amazing. It's beautiful.
It's not ugly.
It's like a side of me that's very strong and firm.
Yes.
And I used to, I think growing up, being Cape Malay, well, I actually identify as colored.
Mm.
I know that lots of Malay people don't want to be called colored. They want to be called Malay, and I can't because I'm so mixed up. I'm like, I identify as colored.
Yeah.
And growing up in the community, I always felt that like, if you were a girl and you had like boyish qualities, you were instantly told you were either tomboy or chase manerach.
And you're vilified.
Yes, you're vilified. And so I decided to tether to my into my femininity, because I could see with my cousins, I have 25 first cousins.
Oh, it's a nice big family.
Yeah, it's massive. And I could see with my cousins that my grandparents preferred those who were more like firm in their gender. So like the boys who were very boyish and the girls who were very delicate and sweet. Yes. So
yeah.
And if you weren't that, you were instantly like vilified.
Yeah, you are like other. You were the other, right?
And you were just like put in this box of like not your grandparents' favorite grandchild.
And then you learn to kill it. That side of you until you grow
older. And be ashamed of it as well.
Yes, you kill that side of you. You're ashamed of it. You don't want to like show it. Yeah. So you don't want to be discoverable. And I think that's something that I only realized later on in life. I'm not bossy, or I wasn't taking up too much space as a kid when I just had cool ideas.
Yeah.
People just didn't know where to place me as someone who's supposed to be this girl or be this woman.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the whole thing about non-binary, it grew from there for me, because I was like, nothing is binary.
Yes.
It's not black. It's not white and white. It's a lot in between. It's not woman and man. There's a lot of other genders in between. Nothing in life is binary. So it kind of just expanded for me from there. And that's why I literally changed my handle. I'm 28.
Okay. I'm 29. So I'm a year older than you.
Mm.
And I felt like for me, it only came like when I birthed my son, I birthed this confidence within myself. Like when I was in high school, you know, everyone like played netball, hockey or whatever.
Yes.
And I was so ashamed that I was so competitive, because in my family dynamic and my grandparents and my extended family played a huge part in my early life. It wasn't seen as like cute to be competitive. So I would instantly tell myself I'm not going to be a part of this. I'm not going to sign up for any sport because I'm afraid that my competitive streak will shine through and I'll be considered bitchy or whatever. And then I just did yoga throughout school. And then in my matric year, my teacher was like, my PE teacher made me do all the sports because you have to do it in matric at our school. Mm-hmm. And she's like, Aisha, you're really good at netball. So I'm like, oh my God, the token colored person at the school. You could
have been bringing in like all the trophies.
Yes. And she's like, why didn't you ever do it at school? So I was like, no, I don't want to do sport. And and now like at 29, like I wish I did karate when I was younger. And for like a long time, from 5 till 11. And I remember my granny being like, why is she doing karate? Like, that's not a girl sport.
What belt did you get to?
I got to brown. I was in Kyokushin, so brown just before black. I was training for black belt. Yeah, I was 11.
Dang.
I was doing black belt training, and I used to come home like and cry every night because my muscles were sore. And then my mom was like, do you want to stop? So I was like, yes, please, can I please quit? And because obviously they couldn't give me like all these supplements that people take It was like your mother just rubbing you with a D-beat.
Oh my God.
And so then I finished a black belt training. So I would have been black belt, but I just did like maybe like 6 weeks of training, which wasn't much. Oh my God,
that is amazing.
Yeah. Oh no, this podcast now just became about me. But I didn't know you were 28 because your sister Laura is 51.
She's 4 years older than me.
Oh really?
Yeah, so she's 32 this year.
And Laura's a famous artist.
Yes, so visual artist. Yes. Some amazing shit.
So is like art big in your family? Like what was the dynamic like growing up where you were, you obviously a brilliant writer and I think an activist as well.
Yeah, so in Laura some ways. Was always the, or is still the, you know, the artist that, you know, the societal artist, the one that draws and creates things in that type of way, visual art, they call it. And then my granddad was he played trumpet in a band.
Oh, cool.
We always knew that he was very musical. My granny on my dad's side was a very good singer.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, due to apartheid, a lot of shit couldn't happen for them. And my mother is also very good at singing and music. So is my dad. They also just didn't have the access. So it's funny. My parents are the flip side of what we're used to seeing around us as parents of color. They were like, oh no, go study art. Go do this. Like you have to do this. You know, you have all of these.
They weren't afraid of what the apartheid did to them, basically.
Yeah, they kind of like wanted us to do things. And I mean, in a way, sometimes I'm like, shit, what am I going to do with my music degree?
But why do you feel that way? So you studied music. What was your intention going into music initially?
I started singing at UCT when I was 16.
Okay. So you sing?
Someone called Virginia Davids. She's like this massive opera singer during apartheid years, and yeah, so she, I started singing with her when I was 16, and I was like, you know, I want to be an opera singer. I'm going to, you know, decolonize opera.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to sing.
She just wokeified. You know, Kim just wokeified opera.
I'm going to be a colored Carmen, you know, yeah. Singing habanero. And then you go there and you realize that actually it's not going to be that easy.
Yeah.
Now when you look, a lot of my peers who I studied with, they're becoming massive singers and I'm so proud of them. It's amazing. They're going all over the world with their amazing voices. But I just realized in my third year, you know, fuck it. I don't like this. I'm going to finish it because a lot of money went into this. And, you know, that's just a colored thing.
Yeah. So
it's
you
didn't.
Yes. I finished my degree knowing that I was not going to use it. I was just like, well, I guess you always use your degree. But I mean, I knew I was going to go into corporate. I was like, this is not for me. Mm. I studied a corporate degree with the intention of going into corporate. And then very quickly, I'm talking about 6 months, I was like, this is not for me. And I just kept going, for 5 years. I was like, let me finish this thing and let me just do.
You just become dead inside after a while, right? Like, but you still continue. Yes.
Did you study further after that?
No, not yet.
Okay,
I want to continue. It's been on my mind for the last 2 years. And I know people are like, you always say you're going to go back, Kim. Why aren't you going back? Put in the work. I'm like, yeah, I'm putting in the work in other spaces. Just wait. Yes. Just wait. It's going to happen. But I think my 30s will be a good time to go back to school.
I'm also thinking of going back in my
30s. I've had 5 to 6 years of like a lot of experience of doing work at the UN, coming back, like doing work here, like different.
So unpack the, if Simi's poking me violently, please unpack the UN for Simi's producer.
Oh,
unpack what you do for the UN, because that's what you do with the FEM project, which you're going to jump into after talking about the book and labeling. I want to know what you do with the UN and what you still do with them.
Okay, so last year I applied for this fellowship through Outright Action International, which is a queer, an international LGBTQIA, which stands for lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, intersex, and asexual organization.
So it's no longer LGBTQ plus.
It is plus, but you can also add the A. Like the plus is just to signify that it's never ending.
Okay,
and it's like
cool.
A massive soup. And that's why some people just call it queer, because within the queer you have those labels. But like I just call myself queer. I'm just sometimes too lazy to unpack it. I'm like, I don't know. You know, I'm still figuring out my stuff.
Yes. Give me a moment.
So I got this fellowship that's based in New York. And what they try to do is they try to bring people from the global south, you know, the international language is the global north and then global south. Like people were basically fucked by the global north during slavery and all
so
of that.
So like all the colonized countries.
Socioeconomically behind, and I'm putting in quotation marks, countries, which is, South Africa is one of them. So I was chosen and I went over and they try to teach you the mechanisms of the UN, of the United Nations and how it works. The headquarters obviously is based in New York. So they would bring us over for various commissions.
They flew you over.
Yeah, they would fly you over.
And they paid for everything while you're there, like food.
For Alice, they give you a per diem, they pay you, you know.
Cool. So you're not, there's no cost to you.
I mean, I had to pay for my visa, but then they reimbursed me.
Okay.
Which is also a problem because a lot of people from these countries or from our countries, now I must, my last 2000 rand, I must have spent for a visa.
That's expensive as well.
I did the same thing today because I'm going to Sweden. And I'm like, I actually am a freelancer and it's not a good time for me.
I hate paying for visas. That's why I didn't change my surname. Well, a lot of reasons why I didn't change my surname. But one of was because I have a US visa. And when my husband and I were discussing like, the fact that we're getting married and he wants to change my surname, I was like, firstly, I don't know how I feel about that. And secondly, I have a US visa. Don't even talk to me.
Also,
I'm not changing my surname.
Also, you can change your surname.
Yes. I asked him. I said to him, but he's got an international career. So he said, no, he can't change his surname because, you know, he's built his brand around the surname. And I was like, same as
ease. No, I mean,
so I wanted to call my son Khalid Baker Parnell.
That's a good one.
And my husband was like, oh, no, you're just kicking me out. And it's a whole discussion.
It's a massive discussion. Even in my family, my mom also wanted to do that, but they never did. And whatever, it doesn't really.
So you have your dad's surname.
Yeah, and I'm gonna keep it.
Okay,
I love it. As I said, I'm an air sign and windbird. I mean, there's no way I'm changing this. So the UN, they would fly us over and to these various commissions, Commission on the Status of Women, where basically people from all over the world come around to speak on women's bodies. Women, when I say women, it's diverse women, so including people who are transgender.
Yes.
And the reason why they flew us over is because we're queer individuals. And if we're not in the room, they make decisions in a heteronormative fashion.
Yes, okay.
So it's like things where they speak about anti-abortion laws, queer people's rights being taken away in terms of same-sex conduct, which is like having sex with someone that's the same sex as you.
Why would there be conduct around that?
Because they don't want you. They have things like sodomy laws in so many countries where basically anal, they banned anal sex because they thought it's a gay thing. And okay. It's like, babes, heterosexual people also have anal sex, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's the whole discussion about...
And what kind
about,
of stuff is happening in our country? Like, were you ever feeling like in that room when you were discussing all of these things regarding women's bodies and stuff? Was there things, you know, we have quite a... I don't know how to describe it, like a tricky situation when it comes to women in this country, not to mention queer people, just women in general across the board. So were there moments in that, in those discussions where you felt like, shit, like embarrassed if I were, like not embarrassed, but like ashamed of like maybe us being backward? And if so, what were those things that like you felt we needed to work on while you were in that space?
Firstly, when you meet with a lot of other African people from other African countries, you enter the room and go, hi, my name is Kim Van Vogel and I'm from South Africa. Immediately, you are the America of the African continent.
Oh, really?
Because you are ignorant, you know nothing of our politics, but they know everything of yours. Like when I meet with other people, with Africans from other African countries, they will know absolutely everything. They test my knowledge as South African and African. And I'm sitting in that room and I'm like, shit, how do you know this?
You're like, I'm not smart anymore.
But I don't know anything about your country. It took me a whole year doing this fellowship where I had to do research. I'm like, oh, that's the president of that country. Like, oh, this is what's happening in Kenya. This is what's happening in Botswana, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I had to get out of my comfort zone to understand why this is the fact.
Okay.
South Africa thinks we're the shit.
Yeah, we do.
And
so sad.
That's why they call us the America of the African continent.
Oh my God.
It's terrible when you're being called out like that, but it's good because you need to acknowledge
that. So what ignorance is, I don't think that's the right word. What ignorant things came up for you, like, as a nation that we need to work on when you were discussing things? Like, obviously, the people around you in your fellowship knew maybe, like, their countries were doing things differently and maybe improved. Mm. So what are some of the things that we can improve on, like, when it comes to women's health, women's bodies?
Look, we have a lot of... I hate trashing South Africa.
No, we're not trashing.
We're not trashing. I just mean there's a
constructive criticism.
Basically, being in that space made me realize that South Africa is very resourceful.
Okay.
We have great policies. We have great laws. Obviously, there's room for improvement. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of stuff that we need to change. Mm. But in terms of we have... something called the CTOPA, that stands for Choice on Termination of Pregnancy Act of 1997.
Yeah.
That means that anyone can have an abortion on demand in this country. If you want an abortion, you're supposed to walk into your health facility and say, I need an abortion, and no one needs to tell you shit.
You
right?
know what I found nice about South Africa as well?
What?
When you're going to other countries, the way people approach contraception, the morning after pill, it's a very shameful approach to it. And I find it so strange because I had to take the morning after pill recently because I'm not ready to have another baby and you know why people take the morning after pill. And I went to the pharmacy and I just was like, hi there, I need the morning after pill. And there was this whole like, shh moment. Yeah. And I'm in the UK and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is so weird. Like, just let me, I had to fill in 2 forms and I had a counseling session and I'm like, oh my goodness. Just like no.
Can
and when you
troll?
Get it, everyone's like, okay, cool. Here's it. You know how to take it. Cool. Done.
But then again, it's also about your positionality and where you are positioned in this country. So for me also, I took a couple of years ago when I was still having sex with men or people with penises, I would just walk in, get my morning after pill and wasn't a problem. But again, it's where you're situated, and if you have money, you can easily just also disregard people's jajaracha looks.
Right.
But you go into schools, like with what we do with FEM, and you speak to kids, and they're like, no, I can't go there. My auntie works there. And the last time I went there, she said she's going to speak to my mommy and go tell her what I'm doing.
Oh, my goodness.
Or they perpetuate myths like, yet back being a JC a virgin, me and me. You know, it's like stuff like that. So there's like a lot.
Okay, just translate for those who don't speak Afrikaans.
Oh, so there's
you
a lot of.
Knock knees, no?
Yeah, back being is like when your legs are like.
How do you describe it? It's basically the opposite of knock knees. So instead of your knees knocking, your knees are pointing out.
Yeah, it's like your like your lower leg is creating this.
Like a bracket, like two brackets.
I don't know what
it's hard to,
But there are weird things. Like we had a workshop last week, and some of the kids were like, you know, my mom said that I got my period because I allow boys to touch me. And it's these funny things that it's not just our parents who perpetuate like, these myths, but it's health practitioners who perpetuate this shit. It's people who, it's teachers who perpetuate this shit.
Yeah.
And you're like,
you know,
what is happening?
Such a funny story. And I just imagine my dad's face when this happened. My mom, I asked my mom to, I gave her my list for clicks, right? Because my dad was going to go buy stuff. And obviously on the list was my tampon. So I was like, Tampax, the mini one, purple box, whatever. My dad comes home, puts the packet on my desk, the usual story. This was when I was in high school. I was about 14. And then he goes on his bed. My mom said he was like distraught. She was like, what's wrong with you? He's like, no, on Aisha's list there was tampons. And my mom goes, okay. And then he goes, I just can't believe she's not a virgin. Huh? My mom goes, why is she not a virgin? And he goes, because she's using tampons. And then she's like, oh, you joke. My mom said she literally stood there and laughed for like a good minute. And she's like, let me just teach you something.
Like, this is a teachable moment.
Yes. And my dad was like, you can't go horse riding because you're going to lose your virginity.
Oh, no.
We don't horse ride.
Or bicycle. You can't go on the bicycle or do the splits. And I'm like, what am I supposed to lay in my bed all day?
That was part of karate. I had to do the splits. And then my granny would be like, why are you doing that? Don't do that. That's not good.
And that's the thing, because still in 2019, people say that the hymen or having a hymen means being a virgin, where so many people with vaginas are born without hymens.
Yeah.
So there's no way that your hymen can equal virginity. And what is virginity even? We need to also unpack that.
Yeah.
It's a concept that really shouldn't exist, because what is virginity? And also, how do people define sex? Usually they define sex as when penis in vagina.
Yes.
Obviously consensually speaking, so. And that is when your virginity is supposedly broken. And it's like, so many times we go into schools and kids are like, okay, so if you have lesbian sex, am I still a virgin? And we're like, and then you have to unpack that. Yes. Because you're also silencing a lot of people when you're telling them, oh, but you're still a virgin, you've only had sex with women or with people with vaginas, you know? And that's another thing. We need to expand the conversation.
What's that guy's name? He's really famous. He's an American guy. I think he hosts like Real Housewives or something. Some famous guy. And he was staying on Wendy Williams, because I love Wendy Williams. It's my guilty pleasure. He was telling her that he was still a virgin. And I thought it was really funny that he said that. And then she said, like, what do you mean? He said, I've never had sex with a woman. And it's so, I mean, he's an older man also. He's in his 40s. So he still identified as being a virgin because he has multiple relationships with multiple partners. And now he's settled in with one partner, life partner. But the fact that he still identified himself as a virgin because he hadn't slept with a woman, being an openly gay man, was interesting.
It's so interesting. I mean, sex is about pleasure.
Yes.
Pleasing however many people are in the room, consensually speaking. So it's like, it's not about penis and vagina.
That is so woke for me. The way you just said, however many people are in the room, I'm like, wow, okay.
Look at that.
I'm not woke enough.
Sex is also not just between two people, you know. It can be between a group of people, three people, whatever. Even just yourself. That's how you, a lot of the times we speak to kids about, when we speak about sex, we ask them what type of sex, you know, exists, and they list if all the types of sexes. And then we're like, okay, but what about masturbation? And then, because our model is sharing our own stories.
So this is FEM Project now.
This is FEM Project.
So did FEM Project derive from your experience at the UN, or was it concurrently going on?
It was before.
Okay.
So FEM started in 2014.
Okay.
And we were called together by a massive parastatal company.
Did you get our donation, by the way, from Baked Online or from me?
Oh, I must go into a bank account from truck.
No, we gave it my birthday. We asked everyone to give a donation to FEM.
Oh my God,
and
I must go.
Products as well, like pads and stuff.
Amazing. Oh, someone came. Someone dropped
my assistant.
Yes,
okay,
yes, good. They dropped it. We have it. And we're currently in
schools
with that.
You about to text her like, where are they?
No. I actually went and met with them. Okay. And we are in schools. We're going back next week.
Oh,
so that's
so
going to
cool.
be one of the last packs that we hand out or provide. right.
So, like, I thought that I found you guys because for my birthday, I obviously get given a lot of gifts and stuff with my job. And I just thought, like, I don't need another gift from a friend. Like, I've got so many. So instead of doing gifts, we said, like, you can either do a monetary donation to Femme or you can give, like, some products.
Amazing.
And some
people
actually wrapped it, which is really cute.
It was so nice. And there's, like, I saw there's, like, deodorant and just different types of sprays. And we're very, like, we're just figuring out how to, like, provide it in gift packs for now. And then that'll be going out.
And is that something that, like, you guys are into getting donations like that? Like,
we
are.
See, so we start, as I said, we started in 2014, right? Yeah. And we started with the menstrual cup.
Okay.
Which is another thing. Like you said, your dad was like, oh, Aisha's not a virgin anymore because she uses tampons. However, we're coming into schools and we're giving people to provide them training and with something called the menstrual cup, which is a small device.
Right?
Yeah, reusable. You insert it into the vagina. It opens up and it catches the period instead of absorbing it like a tampon or a pad would. It's a very hygienic manner of
so
managing your period.
So where does the blood go? That's what I want to
know. It goes into the cup.
Okay.
It's not like a mug. Okay. It's very small and it moves.
Like, how much blood just comes out of
me? Look, it looks, when you use a tampon or a pad, because it absorbs, it looks like you are dying, basically.
Yes, literally. I'll never forget my husband's face the first time he saw a tampon in the toilet. He was, like, mortified.
Yeah, it looks like a lot. Mm. But when you use your cup, depending on what size you're using, because there are different sizes, you realize, oh, actually, I don't bleed that much.
Okay.
It's not, it really depends on you. Obviously,
on
we all have
stuff.
Different flows.
Yeah.
Some people are very light. I mean, you used mini tampons back in the day. I'm not sure if you still use it.
I have very light flow.
Yeah. So,
now everybody on my podcast knows what I'm like.
No, I mean, I can share mine too. I used to have a very heavy flow and like pieces
it changes,
would
right?
come out, mucus and stuff, because it's not just blood. But then as I grew older, I used the IUD, the copper tea.
Okay.
Which is a contraceptive that, that you put in.
How did you find the copper tea?
I was living with a man who could impregnate me. Okay. And I was like, I ain't trying to fall pregnant.
Yeah, I'm thinking of
and
going
I'm
on
forgetful.
It. I'm asking you.
And I cannot, I'm going to forget taking the pill at the same time every day.
I can't commit to the pill.
The injection
that's
wasn't good.
That's how hard it was made. With me not committing to the pill.
Oh, a beautiful thing to make.
No, I love it. It's amazing, but I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So, like, mentally, I wasn't prepared to have a child yet. So,
yeah.
I mean, I got it together and we're fine. It's good. It's healthy.
Of course.
But, yeah, that's what made me think, like, oh, the pill doesn't actually work for me.
Cup of tea is great. I'm not going to lie, especially for someone who I'm going to assume because you have a lighter flow and you call me in if I'm wrong, but you don't have a lot of back pain or any cramps, really.
No.
So that was me. So if you don't have a lot of cramps, and if you don't already have a very heavy flow, I would suggest using the copper tea. How it works is,
and you can have the copper tea and use the cup.
Yes.
And your period. Okay.
And it's fine. Small little device that looks like a tea.
Mm.
And around it, it's tightly
the
wrapped
coil.
With copper.
Okay.
It coiled, yeah. So the coil, the reason why it's copper is because copper is toxic to sperm.
Yeah,
so
it's like a natural
it
sperm.
It naturally
sperm.
Just like. It's like Goku or fucking what's it, Vegeta? It like says, I don't want you, I hate you, basically.
Yeah.
So what they do is you can go to Marie Stopes. It was like 240 rand to insert it. They
also, for anyone listening, you can go to Marie Stopes for any of your contraception.
Yes.
Much cheaper, sometimes free also.
They're semi-private.
Anymore,
if you want free or semi-free polls go
like
to your clinics
and
but Mary Stopes, you're gonna have to pay something.
Okay,
but it's much,
much
cheaper than a private place, and you feel a little bit more like it's a chill place.
It's
I
nicer.
Enjoy Mary Stopes.
It's very clean and nice. And I've actually, before I had my gynae that I've now met with my son, I obviously need to go for gynae visit, and I went to Mary Stopes. And they were so nice, just doing the little, they just did the normal checkup.
Consultation, they're very chill, they don't judge you.
Very
like,
clean, very pretty, actually.
It's
like,
nice.
Looks nice, yeah. You don't feel like you're in a clinic.
Mm. So they take the copper tea, insert it into your vagina, and it goes through the cervix.
Okay.
The cervix is basically, like, if you have to have sex with someone with a penis or you are being fingered, it's that thing at the back of the vagina that nothing can pass it.
Yeah.
The only thing that can pass it is your period, when you are giving birth, or when a doctor needs to go through to perform any form of surgery, which includes placing the copper tea basically at the base of your uterus. So you put it in, it stays there, and then it can stay there inside of you for 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
And you go check it out, I think, once every 6 months or once a year. I went once a year. Then it's almost like that's the only time I ever felt pregnant. Like I would go once a year and they'd put the jaw on my tummy and they show me, there it is. It's still in place. It hasn't been dispelled. And I'm like, I can't see anything, but I trust you.
I trust you. Thank you so
so
much.
So I can go back doing my thing.
And your cup, you use the cup?
Yes,
I
use it up until...
Are you an advocate for the cup?
Look, I am... Because I believe it's very sustainable, but I do believe that we can think of other ways as well.
Okay.
Look, the cup is great. I do advocate for it. I've used it. I still use it. But I go through days, on my heavy days, I know I can't use the cup because I forget about it because it feels like you're wearing nothing.
Okay.
And then I leak all over the place. So on my heavy days, I prefer to use a tampon or two, whereas on my other, the rest of my days, I use the cup. In that way, I'm still being more sustainable.
Yeah.
I know it's not the best, but I'm not going to tell
people. I love
the idea
of mixing it with your...
Mix it up.
Yeah.
It depends on your mood. Yeah. Sometimes I know I'm not going to have access to a toilet where I feel comfortable and I have to clean and wash the thing. Mm. So I'm not going to use the cup. I'm on the run.
Talk us through exactly. I'm like fascinated by this cup.
Yeah.
So talk us through the cup. How does it work? It's a little plastic thingy.
Well, not plastic. It's silicone.
Okay.
Medical grade silicone because you're inserting it into your vagina.
Yeah.
So it looks like... You know those
cone.
Yeah, you know those things where you put a boiled egg on for breakfast?
Yeah.
So it looks like that little cuppy thing.
Okay.
And obviously it's not made out of wood. It's made out of medical grade bendable and pliable silicone.
Okay.
So you fold it in a certain way. The way that I use it is I just fold it in half.
Okay.
And then you can put your one leg on the toilet. You can just hunch over the toilet depending on how your body is formed. Our vaginas are all different. You just find your groove basically.
Yes.
You put it in. And then you allow it to open up.
Okay.
How you know it's in place is when, firstly, take your finger and roll it while it's inside. Roll it around the sides.
Okay.
If there are any dents, you know that you're going to leak because obviously your period is going to come through your cervix and it's going to leak past that space. So you must ensure that it's open. And
it's very like logical.
It's very logical. Mm. And then when it's open, you know that it is going to create a... very, very light suction around the walls of your vagina. And that
you don't
keeps
feel
it in place.
It at all.
Don't feel it at all. In the beginning, my first time I used it, I remember sitting in the office with Lauren and Kelly, my co-directors, and I said to them, yo, man, I need to go to the bathroom. Like, I think I'm leaking. And they're like, no, don't fidget.
Paranoid.
Don't fidget. Like, it takes a while. It took me about 4 months to get into it.
But is that like mentally comfortable with the fact that now you're not using a pad which you are used to using or a tampon which you are used to using?
Yeah, it's the rite of passage. It's like anything new. You need to get comfortable with it.
When you shift from a pad to a tampon,
exactly.
Also, like, you feel weird.
Exactly.
Like I can't feel anything. There's no crinkling. I don't have to like... I remember at school when I first started wearing a tampon, you'd always like when you get up from sitting on the floor, you'd stand up in a certain way because you were scared that you'd stand up and suddenly blood would gush out.
Exactly.
And then you're wearing a tampon, you're like, I'd still do that weird movement of like, oh, someone check me.
Yeah, yeah. Can someone just look before you? Just look where I'm like,
yes, please check me.
Whispering in the hallways.
Exactly.
And it can take 3 times the amount of blood that a tampon or a pad can.
And where does the blood go?
Into the cup. So how
and
you...
from the cup where?
So, yeah. So, what you do is you go back into the toilet or bathroom, wherever you are, even in your room if you're comfortable. I don't know what your vibe is. And then you insert your thumb and your index finger of whichever hand is your dominant hand, I'm assuming. You pinch the base. And when you pinch the base, it releases the light suction that I mentioned around the walls.
Right.
And then you just wiggle it out slightly.
Mm.
You don't want to just pull it out. You wiggle it nicely, you know, be kind to your vagina. And then you can look at it. It's interesting. It's very dark red. It could be lightly depending
like
on it.
Is there a little mini pool of blood in there?
Yeah, there's a mini pool of blood.
Wow.
You can tip it into the toilet. And then depending on where you are. If you're at home, obviously there's nothing to worry about. You just go to the basin, rinse it and reinsert it.
Okay.
If you're in a public toilet, what you can do is you can also just wipe it with toilet paper and then reinsert it.
Okay.
Because it's 100% medical grade silicone, it's safe to do that.
You need to wash it with sunlight.
Oh my God, that's the thing. You only wash it with hot water.
Okay.
When you get back home, you can sleep with it. You can do all of those types of things. But do not use any soap that you wouldn't use in your vagina because you're going to itch. And then you're going to go tell everybody, oh, that cup is not good because it just... But actually,
you know,
were using
our community, the first thing you want to do is like, oh, sunlight soap? chick.
I mean, it might it might discolor.
Milton.
Oh my God.
I'm just thinking of all the things like our people would say, like, oh, you need to put Milton sit.
No. You cannot do any of that. Yeah. And when
hot water, washing it only.
Hot water. When it discolors, especially when you're using a transparent cup, because nowadays they have all the red ones, the pink ones, the blue ones, especially because it discolors. So they're trying to like save you from thinking that it's dirty.
Okay, cool.
But if you have a translucent or a see-through one, it's going to discolor. You're working with blood here.
Yes.
Don't worry. You don't need to drink it. It's fine. It's part of the process. And I mean, you can live with it for 5 years, to 10 years.
Before you need to change it.
Before you need to buy a new one.
Okay.
And once we were out of school and we were like, you know, it lasts for 5 years. And this one kid was like, so how do you take it out after 5 years?
No. So tell us a bit.
Kids are hilarious.
Tell us a bit about the kids and like what FEM project is going. Like, what are you guys doing when you're going to visit schools? What ages are your kids that you're talking to?
Okay.
What kind of schools are you going to? What kind of communities are you doing things across the board?
So currently we're in Matrosfontein, at a school Marion High. That's like our base school.
Okay.
Initially we had a ton of funding because we were working with that parasitical company that I mentioned earlier on. And we were able to go to 20 schools in a year and, you know, go to the same schools 3 times to ensure trust is formed.
Yeah.
So now we have significantly obviously had to pull back. So now our base school is Marion.
So you're looking for funding again?
We're looking for funding because we want to ensure that, I mean, we've worked with 5,000 learners so far. It's a really good number, and we've kept relationships with those schools as well. I think that's really important.
And I think the best thing about saying you've worked with 5,000 learners already is that I know for me, I got all of my vaginal advice on periods and whatever from my cousins who are older than me. So even though you've touched base with those 5,000 girls and maybe you can't go back to the same schools or as many, I think still it's such a good thing because the word of mouth of it all will help, and people will educate each other. As women, we're always like, oh, I've got this weird bump. Like, it might be a cyst. We never actually go straight to the doctor. We always ask each other.
Yeah, the grapevine of information, you know? Yeah, so we seek to debunk a lot of myths. So we go, we create a space, and we tell them, look, this is what we're talking about. Now, our previous workshop from last week that we started is safer sex practices.
Okay.
And we focus on all types of safer sex. So we talk about how you can use dental dams or cling wrap when you are performing cunnilingus, which is oral sex on a vagina, or a vulva, which is the outside of the vagina. And you have finger condoms. There's a range of condoms that people do not provide to kids because they're like, oh, we're supposed to just end pregnancy for teenagers.
Yeah.
But that's not the only way that we can provide safety for kids. You know, queer kids also need safer sex practices because, you know, everybody needs them. So,
also the reality of sex being so raw, like in terms of like, it can be unhygienic. Like, I think, you know, if you think of teenagers, young teenagers, not being told simple things like, I know this is something my gynae would always say, is like, you need to make sure he washes his hands. A lot of people don't know that.
Wash your hands. I mean, you touch a lot of things. You put it in your mouth.
And now that thing's inside you.
Now it's here in my moist vagina where bacteria is just waiting to spring up from everywhere, you know. So
giving girls an education, just wash it. You know what someone said to me the other day? Never shake a teenage boy's hand. You never know where it's been. I always think about it now. They're like, oh, producer's having a heart attack. Are you okay? Do you need your asthma pump?
That's so funny. But it really is the truth. We have to provide that space and just have these discussions. And also what parents need to know and teachers is that when you speak to a 14-year-old and you're giving them information, this is not me saying, go outside and fornicate with everybody. I am not telling you to go and have sex. But at some point in your life, something is going to happen.
Yeah.
You're going to be faced with, you're going to come at a cross path where you're going to be like, oh my God, should I listen to my Catholic parents and like actually like abstain for the rest of my life until I'm married or whatever? Mm. Or do I follow my body? Mm. Or do I follow what I want? And you're going to have to make a decision in that moment, even if you think you were never going to feel tempted by it.
Yeah.
It's just, you need that information so that you know. And you can tell someone, no, I don't want you to do that.
Yes, I don't want you to touch my
This is how I want you to do it. Yeah. Or yeah. Here is a condom that Femme Project provided a year ago, and it only expires in 2023, so I can use it.
So you teach them that the condoms expire and that they must read the expiry date.
We teach them the Oprah method.
Okay.
Can I go through that?
Go through the Oprah.
So the O stands for two things. It's observe, which is you observe, are there any bumps, open things? No, it's not open, it's closed. There's no holes, nothing. Because no, you don't be trapped.
Yeah.
So you check that out.
You're getting trapped.
Then you observe, the other part that you observe is the expiry date.
Okay.
Okay, cool. It expires in August of 2022. Cool, I can still use it. Then you open. That's the second O.
Okay.
Okay. Then the P stands for also two things, place and pinch.
Okay.
So the Oprah method is obviously for an external condom, which they used to call the male condom.
Okay.
But now we know that sex and gender is much more different than that. So you
complex.
Yeah, it's much more complex. Thanks. So you place and pinch it on the top of the penis. So you place it on top of the penis and then you pinch the little
air bubble
thingy, the air bubble, and then the R stands for roll, the A stands for action, and the H stands for hold at the base, because when you pull out, you want to ensure that that condom does not go inside of either the anus, the mouth, the vagina, whatever it may be, so that otherwise you might as well have not used it, so you don't want to forget the H.
And I
want to
know, what is the response from kids when you're speaking? Is a lot of screaming, laughing, giggling?
Oh my God.
Just imagine.
It depends on who you're working with, and it depends on the grade, and it depends on a lot of things.
Okay.
So last week, I don't know if this, I'm even allowed to share this stuff, but there's a,
no, don't say the school.
Yeah, that's what I'm not going to say. The school, I'm just going to leave it. But it depends on who you're working with. Mm. But kids generally, I mean, they're kids. Mm. They're going to be very rowdy. They're going to see you bring out this fake penis.
Okay.
And you're asking someone to volunteer to show you how they would do it or whatever. And then you teach them the Oprah method.
Okay.
One kid last year said to me, Miss, because when I was younger, we just started out. We're like, no, don't call me Miss. But now I'm old. I'm like, I know how I like it.
Yes, it's Miss.
The one kid said, Miss, I'm so happy that you taught us the Oprah method. But now every time I'm going to put on a condom, I'm going to think of Oprah. I was like, what? It could be a good thing, you know?
Killing the buzz. And then parents, do parents get upset? Are they shook? Are they interested?
We have never had any issues with parents. What we do
they
is
don't want to have this conversation with their
they
kids.
They don't want to. Mm-hmm. They're just like, and also kids aren't easily going to share the information with their parents that they are very grateful for, because they know that parents might have an issue. However, we do share it with the teachers.
Okay.
We train them. We speak to them. We tell them, look, we're coming with a feminist perspective here, and we're trying to be inclusive of all genders and sexualities. Mm. So we're going to be speaking about safe sex, safer sex, excuse me. There's no such thing as safe sex. We're going to be speaking about safer sex practices for all genders and all sexualities. And you need to be okay with that. And you need to understand what we're doing. So most schools are just so grateful.
Because they don't have to have the conversation. I think it's quite intimidating for a teacher to have to, even if it's like a life orientation.
They
teacher.
Can't hold the space most of the time. But I will say, a lot of the schools that we've worked with, the teachers are quite progressive. But, but the kids, they need an external person. Yes. They need to look at someone that's similar in age, or someone that's not maybe their age, but they can see themselves.
Yes, right.
And relate to that person a little bit more than they can to a teacher who is still an authoritative figure.
Yeah.
The first thing we say to kids is, I'm not your teacher.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to a teacher and say, I'm not going to speak about that. It's not my job.
Yeah.
What my job is to come and teach you certain things. And what you do with that information is up to you.
Yes.
You don't have to use the menstrual cup.
Mm.
You don't have to take this pleasure pack. We call it the pleasure pack, which has all the condoms in it. It's choice.
Mm.
If you don't want it, you don't want it.
And are you discussing consent with them?
Yes. Very important. We discuss virginity with them, because it's always a conversation that comes up. Kids, especially kids who are raised or reared as girls, are always speaking about virginity.
Mm.
You show them, and oh, abortion as well.
Yeah.
There's just a lot, basically reproductive health in general. And there's a lot of myths and a lot of, it's not discomfort, there's another word I'm looking at, confusion. Because they hear one thing from parents or from this person or the pastor or that. Yeah. They see one thing on the TV, they hear another thing on the internet, they see another thing in a meme, and then they hear us coming in. And yeah. It's like, okay, so now where do I place what is real and what is not?
Yeah, what am I actually learning about? What is what and what is not?
It's about building trust and it's about telling them that your decisions or your life is valid. So next week we're going to go into another school. We're speaking. They asked, because we always ask them in the first week, what do you want to learn about next time?
Yeah.
So now they're like abortion, different contraceptives, and they always want to know more about their menstruation. It's a
you know,
non-stop.
I love that you're saying this. It's like kids are hungry for the information, and just to have that space for them to feel they can easily access it without having to go to a clinic. Because I think that can be intimidating at that age when you're just like rediscovering your body. It's now changed. It's a new, a new person. Because with puberty obviously comes all that change. So I think like what you're doing is so impressive. And it makes me like a little bit emotional, holding it back. So I'm going to segue out of my emotions. And I'm going to ask you in your personal capacity, like obviously you've written your book now and whatever, so and you've worked with the UN and obviously your work with FEM project is really important, but what are your personal goals? Like, where do you want to be besides studying? Like, what are you working on next?
Oh my god. I used to hate this question when I was at school. Like, where do you see yourself in the next 20 years? And I'm like, I don't know.
Next 20 years, like,
I'm
maybe
kidding,
like
I'm
what
kidding,
can
I'm
we
kidding, I'm kidding.
What are you excited about?
No, I'm kidding. Honestly, for me, I want to stay in the space that I'm in, not necessarily on the same level, not necessarily in. I just want to remain steadfast, firstly, in my beliefs, in the ideologies that I have. I'm obviously aware of the fact that it might shift due to how language shifts and how, you know, understanding shifts.
Yes.
But I want to remain in reproductive health and queer rights. And then I want to go back to studying. I want to do a degree in gender. I don't actually have to, but I feel like sometimes it's good.
Don't you think you'd approach it differently now, though? Yeah. Like now that you've actually worked in
it's a much bigger
reproductive health. Yeah.
Yes.
It would be interesting for you to be able to focus on, you know, gender politics and all that surrounds. And especially in our, I think it's important to have our country's dynamic play a role in that, because I mean there are certain things that we maybe are not accustomed to. Our country is still very conservative. This is still very new in a lot of countries, but I think because we have less people that it just feels newer when you're going to like a colonizer like a western country. Everyone seems more woke, but I think it's just because there are more people.
No, you're right. Yo, I don't know, man. There's a lot that I want to do. I also want to, internally speaking, I want to figure out how to navigate a capitalist system that is in direct, reflection or ill reflection of what I don't want. Like, I love nice things, and I know that I can love money as well.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, what am I supposed to do when we are trying to like fight for more inclusive society?
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of things that I want for myself. But I think for me, the most important thing is wherever I find myself, other than from goals that I have, wherever I find myself, I want to have goals within that situation.
Yes.
And I want to be happy with the decisions that I make.
Small victories.
And I want to always be innovative wherever I find myself.
Yes.
Be innovative, find inclusive and sustainable ways of working, whether you are in the corporate side of life, whether you are a so-called activist, you know, people call me an activist, whatever. Wherever you
like
are.
Whatever. I love how you hate myself. I didn't call you an activist for a reason. I feel like she won't like it. Let me avoid activists.
Like, wherever you find yourself, create a space where you are happy and thriving and innovative and always surprising yourself.
Yeah, so I'm so all about that. That's where I'm at now in my life as well.
Yeah.
So I just want to quickly plug the FEM Project because I really love it. Where can everyone follow the FEM Project? Where can they find information? Where to give donations?
Yes. You can go onto our website, which is femprojects.org.za, F-E-M-M-E projects.org.za. And then you can also find us on Instagram, FEM Project. And if you don't know what FEM Project stands for, it stands for Freedom of Education Motivates Empowerment. It used to, in 2014, stand for Female Education Motivates Empowerment. But as we say, we progress and language shifts and we shift and we realized that's very essentialist. Yes. So let's shift it.
Shifted it. Yes. Yeah, I'm proud of that.
That's so cool. So we shifted that. And we also started to become more inclusive of different genders. So we couldn't just work with female education.
Yeah.
So that's what it stands for. And yeah, find us online. Say, send a message. You can also, if you are looking to find an abortion and you've had a lot of issues, I admin a group called ASSA, which is Abortion Support South Africa. You can just message us on Facebook. Tell us what your grievance is, like where you're looking for it in South Africa, and we will find a space for you where you can have it, whether that be public or private. Okay. What other groups do I admit? Oh my God, I'm so But like, it's about support.
Yes.
And yeah, Facebook is the easiest way to find people.
Yeah.
So yeah, find us. We're online. We'll help you.
And if there's anyone out there who wants to help, maybe someone out there wants to fund the FEM Project, can you give them some guidance as to how they can do that? So just go to your website? Or?
Yeah, go to our website, email us. Okay, it can either be me, Kim, Lauren, or Kelly. We're all co-directors and co-founders. Just plug us. Just reach out. Currently, one of the schools that we're at, they're really, really looking at revamping their bathrooms because nothing flashes. It's really terrible, actually. And I can understand why a lot of kids are just like, I'm not even going to go there and use the bathroom. I'm going to walk home first and come back to the school.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, message us and we will tell you who needs money. A lot of the times people are like, oh, my foundation needs money. I understand that. But if you want to provide money for a specific cause, we will tell you where you can go and we'll tell you what the school is, what they need. And that's also just a way of making it a little bit, you know, selfless. But it would be great if you plug FEM and pay us some money.
Yes, send me money, guys.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Kim. And thank you all for tuning in. You can follow both of us. You can follow Kim at Blazing Non-Binary. And you can follow me at Baked Online. You can find me online, www.bakedonline.co.za. Thank you so much to Work & Co. for allowing us to record our podcast in the beautiful Cape Town offices once again. We are overlooking the ocean, the mountain on the other side of me. Beautiful artwork all around us from local artists. So thank you for letting us use this inspiring space. And you can find Work & Co. at Work & Co. on Instagram. And you can find them online as well. Just give them a little Google. See you soon.
This is a POC podcast production. This is a POC podcast
powered by Blue Blood.